The title of my address is Laughter as Grace. About a year ago, I did my very first reading in the church, and immediately afterwards, someone asked me, would I be ready for a service? And I went, it's taken 13 years to get this far. I think it might take a bit longer. But as luck would have it, the book that I was reading from was called Now is the Time by Sister Stan. And I was talking about still points, and there was a chapter called A Time to Be Still. But what really resonated with me in that book was the chapter A Time to Laugh. And as I was walking home from church, I saw one of the writers of Black Books, one of my favourite sitcoms, which also has my favourite comedian, Dylan Moran. And I thought, oh, well, hang on, I'll look at that A Time to Laugh chapter and see if anything stands out. And there was a line in that chapter called, that Sister Stan wrote, and it was, laughter is always grace. It's music to the soul. So I thought a little bit further about that, and you might be wondering, why did I choose the title Laughter as Grace instead of Laughter is Always Grace? Because I think it's important that we laugh with people, that it is benevolent humour as opposed to laughing at people, so it's not always grace. So we all know what laughter is, and I thought a little bit more about what grace is. And I came across an author called, her name is Sarah Wilson, and she wrote a beautiful book called My One Wild and Precious Life. And in it, she speaks an awful lot about living minimally, and she lived for 8 years out of Haversack, believe it or not. But she also wrote another beautiful book called First We Make the Beast Beautiful, and it's about anxiety. And in it, she defines grace superbly, in my opinion. She says that grace is something that is unasked for, it can be undeserved, and it is freely given. And who is it given by? Well, she mentions that it might be given by God or by the universe or by the flow of life. And to me, what I love about laughter is that you don't even need to speak to laugh. What comes to mind is, as some of you know, I've been on a silent retreat. We laughed all the way through it without speaking. And for the last 5 years of my life, of her life, my nanny couldn't speak as a result of a stroke, but she was still able to get on the bus from Drimna, meet me at Angelo's Chipper across from Whitefriars Street Church, go in, order a cod and chips without speaking, take the false teeth out, put them on the table, and then listen to me speak for an hour and a half while she made her way through the fresh cod and chips. Also, I've been very grateful to support and work with people who are pre-verbal and non-verbal children and adults. And I've also met a gorgeous guy in Timor, in Indonesia, of all places, just when the Berlin Wall went down. And he received money from West Germany at the time, as all East Germans did. And he decided to go traveling with not a word of English. And I sat with him for a few hours trying to teach him English, and we spent most of the time laughing. And then 2 months later, I met him on the other side of Indonesia, and he could speak English perfectly. It just showed great courage, and it just goes to show how universal laughter is. We know the verse well, Ecclesiastes 3:4, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. And many times it's used at funerals. And indeed, Sister Stan says in A Time to Laugh that it is really important that we know how to cry and how to weep. It is an essential emotion, but it's also really important that we know when to stop. Tears turn us inwards, whereas laughter turns us outwards. And we know for a fact that humour has the ability to transcend suffering. As Khalil Gibran says, the self-same well from which your laughter rises was once filled with tears. And in fact, many of us, me especially, when I'm told bad news, will often laugh. Sometimes I don't know whether I should be crying or laughing. And we all often laugh until our eyes water. In fact, I have been at the cinema and laughed so much I actually headbutted the person in front of me. We also know that we have gallows humour, which is quite grim, quite black. As Stephen Levine, who the well-known Buddhist who's worked in hospices, has talked about the absurdity of the moment. And one of the funniest podcasts I've heard, Dearan Garrahy has a podcast called The Loves of Your Life, where she asks each of the guests the same questions. When did you first laugh? When were you first laughed at? And one of the funniest episodes is Des Bishop actually talking about his parents' deaths. And he would have you in stitches because we can actually imagine ourselves in that situation. And in actual fact, it's one of the reasons why in Ireland wakes are so important, because we share those memories, the experiences that made us laugh or that were so bad that we end up laughing. And we're really good at self-deprecating humour. And I remember when my mum passed during COVID, I recalled that we had written to each other before mobile phones when I was travelling and working abroad, and I went up to the attic, fished them out and shared them amongst my siblings. And we really did laugh at some of the funny stories she'd send. Like, for example, she took 36 driving lessons without telling anyone. She never actually did pass her driving license, so nobody ever knew this took place. But my nanny, who I mentioned before, used to come down on Saturdays to join in. We always had stew in our house on Saturdays, and the extended family would come down, and she came down and she says, "Carmel," she said, "I don't believe it. I think there's a doppelganger going around Drimna. Get taking driving lessons of all things." And my mum was standing at the kitchen sink roaring, laughing to herself, going, "If only she knew how bad I was." Some of us are very, very lucky. We laugh a lot. I happen to be one of those people. My earliest photo is of me laughing, and I was called Smiley in college. Now, do I feel like that a lot of the time? No. I just happen to be one of those fortunate people. But not everyone is like that. Nor have we had families who love telling funny stories. But my dad worked very, very hard, and on Sundays he loved to tell us stories. And they were always about how he got into trouble in school and all the funny things he got up to. And it was only years later, when I was going through the vinyl collection, that I realised that he was plagiarising Butler from Brendan Grace. So we loved to Saturday nights, we loved sitcoms, we loved Dave Allen, any sort of comedian whatsoever. So there was a time when I worried that my family would never laugh again. You know, when you have really bad news and you lose a child in a family, and we've all been through situations of grief and loss and profound sickness. But luckily, we are resilient enough as a people to actually find ways of getting through. And similarly, when I had my own children and was lucky enough to do a course in philosophy and read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, I made a family mission. And the first line was, "Our home is full of fun, love and laughter." And every Friday night was family night. And we would sit and watch a family-friendly sitcom together and fight over the giant bar of chocolate. And some of you know, in the last few weeks leading to this address, my dad had a house fire and was in ICU. Thankfully, that's had a good outcome. Well, the house is still in bits, but we'll get there. And two of my children text me, would you believe, they were actually in the house when they text me, wanting to know, would I like to watch something with them? And I was just overcome with this sense of they really get it. And it was lovely to sit down and watch Friday Night Dinners. I've never seen that before. Apparently there's 6 seasons of it. I'm on episode 3. And it's about a Jewish family who come together every Friday night in London. And it has the same format, and it's just hilarious. It's so obvious, it's quirky. And then one of the other fellas let me watch my favourite episode of The Royal Family. Episode 1, season 3, by the way, where the main characters strip wallpaper to Mambo number 5. No dialogue whatsoever. So then I start thinking about Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. Not everybody's cup of tea when it comes to stand-up, but Afterlife is a beautifully written sitcom, and he developed this character based on what would have to happen to someone if the worst thing ever happened to them in the whole wide world, and then they didn't care what they said. And it is actually very moving, as well as funny. And I thought about all of the comedians who've been sent to the front in times of war to entertain the troops. And most of us are old enough to remember the hit series MASH, which was set in the Korean War. So one of my favourite websites, because I love to send e-cards, is gratefulness.org. And it was set up by Brother David Steindl Rest, who you may have heard of. And in it, I found an article, Anonymous, which really I felt fit the whole idea of humour helping us to transcend suffering. So I'm going to read this extract from you, for you. One thing I've learned from spending much of my own childhood in times of war and political upheaval is the importance of cultivating joy during crisis. During the eight-year Iran-Iraq war, which killed over a million people, life was far from joyful. We became accustomed to daily funerals, food rations, and political oppression. Alcohol, dancing, and playing music had suddenly become illegal. But with these external challenges, I observed a few adults' ability to nurture joy and a sense of humour. As the threat of bombing loomed, they told jokes and made everyone laugh until their eyes watered. This made us all feel better in the moment, but what research is discovering is that joy and laughter are essential for building the superpower of resilience and even boosting our immunity. One of my favourite podcasts is called Just One Thing, and sadly Dr. Michael Mosley, who presented and produced it, died during the summer whilst he was on a Greek island. The premise of the show is that over 15 minutes he encouraged us to think of this one thing that could make our lives better, and he gets a member of the public to experiment with it. So they're kind of weird, some of them, like standing on one leg, walking backwards, and more mainstream stuff like eat slowly, do some yoga, and one of the episodes is have a laugh. And from that episode, I was delighted to hear that when you laugh, you produce the same gamma brain waves as you do during meditation. So you don't necessarily have to sit for those 5 minutes every day, you can just laugh. So one of the things that he encouraged a member of the public to do was to watch a sitcom. And I was so delighted, because that's something I like to do to cheer myself up. And also, I've encouraged students, I teach at FE level, that when they're feeling a little bit down, now I don't mean depression, that is very, very different. We know that is profound suffering. To just watch something that makes them laugh. Or, as Dr. Michael Mosley says, ring someone, ring a friend, and just have a chat. And maybe you'll end up talking about something that's happened to you, or maybe that you've witnessed, and before you know it, you're laughing. And the outcome was very, very good for that member of the public. So, recently I came across two articles that made me a little bit worried about people in general, and it made me think about myself. Because I know I need to do this more. And the headline is, people feel they don't owe anyone anything. The rise of flaking out in social plans. This comes from The Guardian. And what they've discovered is that a large number of people are flaking out, which is basically at last minute letting people know by text that they're not going to attend a wedding. And they're not going to attend a funeral, not just your average social event. They're also finding a rise in asynchronous communication, and I'm guilty of that too. I send a text or a voice message, or I don't look at texts or voice messages till hours later or the next day. We're not making calls. Many people feel burnt out by the number of messages they're receiving, and there is a growth in loneliness. That, coupled with another article I read in the Irish Times, and the headline is, No, I'm not phoning to say I'm dying. My grueling week of calling Gen Z rather than texting. So the journalist spent a week actually calling people that she knows, and sometimes she rang people a number of times before they answered. And what she discovered was that 61% of 18 to 34-year-olds prefer texting, and 56%, if they receive a call, believe it's bad news. So what is the relevance of this to me? Today, what it means to me is that the rise of asynchronous communication and non-person-to-person communication and talking to people by phone means that people are missing out on shared bonding connections and experiences and genuine opportunities for laughter. We now have a situation in Ireland where we have 30 locations where you can avail of social prescribing. So what that means is you can go to your GP. You might be lonely, you might have mental health challenges, and your GP will help you to find a community social prescriber that will enable you to access activities and experiences that might improve your well-being. We know from one of Tony Brady's addresses that there are men's sheds in Ireland, and in Ireland we have more men's sheds than in any other country other than the one that they originally started in, which was Australia. We now have 450 men's sheds. Plenty of opportunity for people to do and work together and potential for laughter. And in the last 2 years, we have seen the rise of sister sheds. There's 25 of them now in Ireland, set up by two sisters. That's why they're called sister sheds, primarily for women. So really what we need to do, in my opinion, is increase our chances and opportunities for laughter by having real-time communication. We're very lucky in this church to have meditation on Wednesdays facilitated by Pam over the tea and coffee afterwards, as well as sharing maybe some sad events of the week. We have plenty of opportunity to laugh at ourselves and also some of the experiences that we've witnessed or observed. We also have tea and coffee downstairs, and we have book clubs and walking clubs. As Martin Luther King says, it is cheerful to God when you rejoice or laugh from the bottom of your heart. Many of you may also have heard of Roisin Ingle, a well-known columnist from The Times, who recently on a podcast, the Women's Podcast, and Brendan O'Connor's radio show, spoke about the tough year she's had with her diagnosis of cancer, but also her many opportunities for joy, including a wedding in the middle of all of this. So I will leave you with one of the quotes I picked up from that podcast. You probably think I do nothing but do podcasts. I walk a lot. And it is, even with this really dark stuff, you can still have joy. You can still have fun. And things can carry on if you choose to let it. Amen.